My guest today is a German writer who trained as an interpreter and a translator in Valencia in Spain. He studied German, Spanish and Portuguese literature and language in Cologne, Bonn and Lisbon. He's head of the German Institute at the Federal University of Pará in Brazil for a couple of years. And together with his wife, Ricarda Soms, he founded a publishing house. He's received awards. One of his books been made into a film and also a play. He's an enormously successful writer who's based in Munich. And he's here on the show with me today. Stephen Uhle, welcome to Meet the Writers.
Thank you for having me.
We have to start with your name, really, because I started calling you Uhle, but it could be Uhle or, in fact, Uhle.
Yeah, it's Uhle. In German, they say Uhle.
Mm-hmm. In many places, you're described as a German Bengali writer, but you dispute that.
Well, it depends on how you look at it. In terms of genetics, I'm German Bengali. In terms of culture, I grew up with my Spanish stepfather, and I have more cultural influence from Spain than from Bangladesh. That's why I prefer simply that I'm a German writer, because I was born in Cologne, I grew up in Germany, and my passport is German, so I'm a German writer.
Growing up in Germany of that time, was it a racist place?
Yes, to a certain extent. It was racist, and I suffered with this because there were old people who called me names passing by on the street, and there were people of my age, children, who repeated the stupidities of their parents, I imagine. And so, yes, it was shocking for me, and it made me think about my country.
And, of course, a lot of that's reflected in your book, just what
yes.
Germanness means and
yes.
so on. And we'll go into that in a little while. Another theme that seems to run through your book is this abandonment, this feeling of a child being abandoned. And I wonder where that comes from.
Well, perhaps it comes from that situation, because I noticed from the beginning that my mother was embarrassed. I once told her that I had been called names, and she was embarrassed. I noticed that, and from that moment on, I stopped talking to her, and so I had nobody to talk to about this subject, and I felt abandoned in this way. And very, very late, I think I started in fact, in 1990, I felt the first relief of this when Germany was reunited, and when suddenly all these openly racist acts took place in Germany, like Rostock, Hoyerswerda, Mölln, these attacks on foreigners. And then finally the Germans couldn't ignore this truth anymore. And this was a great relief for me. That's when things started to change for me.
Do you think that these experiences in your childhood is what drives your writing?
I think so, part of it. I discovered poetry when I was 9 years old, and I tried to write my first novel when I was 11 years old, and my second when I was 14 years old. So it has been with me all my life, this force, in a way, to express myself. And I think when I was 9 years old, I remembered very well. I suddenly discovered that truth and beauty could go together. And I found that in poetry. So I became an addict to this because it opened a space inside of me where I could, without shutting myself down for reality, I could look at it and at the same time make it into something beautiful.
Who among the poets, are there any in particular that inspired you?
Rilke was a big inspiration for me, and Fernando Pessoa was perhaps even more important to me, because Fernando Pessoa had this struggle of multiple identities I reluctantly in the beginning had to identify with. I was afraid of Fernando Pessoa in the beginning because he touched me so deep inside that I wouldn't read him, but I couldn't resist him because on one hand I had to study him. I was studying Portuguese literature, and it would have been absurd not to read Fernando Pessoa. And when I started reading him, I realized that he was very, very close to me, and that his problematics were really very similar to mine.
Mm. There's a whole debate going on in the English education system about learning poetry by heart, and so many famous quotes about how you're never alone if you have a poem in your head. Is that something you subscribe to?
Well, I'm not the one who learns poetry by heart as a principle. There are some poems I know by heart because they touched me very deep inside, so I simply learned them without any effort. But I remember there was a time when I knew all my own poems by heart because I had a dog when I was a child and I had to go on walks with him, and that's where I made most of my poems, and of course I had to remember them in order to write them down afterwards. So I knew them by heart, and when they were beautiful, so beautiful that they didn't seem to be my own, that was always the criteria, and then I repeated them till they lost their appeal, so that that was very intense. I remember this very well.
Do you think then there's something about the act of creativity and the act of walking, of physical movement that goes together?
Well, at that time it was. Today it's a little different. In a way, I was conditioned to do this like that because I had to. And it was the time when I was alone and had this calmness. But today I think I've freed myself in a way from many conditions. I don't push myself, for example. There was a time during my puberty when my head changed and everything was like struggling inside, when I pushed myself to writing poems because I was afraid I would lose this. And I had to free myself from this. And now I'm more patient. I wait until it comes to me. I'm not looking for it anymore.
Tell me about your education, because you knew then, obviously, that you wanted to write. You'd already done two novels as a teenager. How did you then pursue that?
Well, for a long time, I thought I was unable to finish novels because I had written 150 pages, which was a lot for an 11-year-old boy. But I couldn't finish them because what I realized many years later, it was subjects that taught me something different. My first novel was a novel about living as a trapper in Canada on my own. And I wrote it until I was so exhausted by being alone that I realized this is not your path. You have to turn towards humanity and not away from it.
Yeah.
And my second one was a science fiction. And again, I had to realize that this was another form of trying to escape reality. And that's when I failed to finish that novel. I stopped reading science fiction and started to read real literature. And so I learned a lot from them. But on the other hand, I thought that I was unable to finish novels. And many, many years later, I managed to finish a novel for the first time, and that's when I started to really write novels.
Mm-hmm. Well, so your first published novel, My Life in Aspect, came out in 2010.
Yes.
And we were talking earlier about Germanness, and this looks a lot at German identity, at language, at exclusion, at multiculturalism. What do you draw from that?
This novel was like an outburst because it's really mad. I disobeyed any rule you normally think you have to obey when you write a novel, and I enjoyed it very much. It's really a wild novel. It made me laugh while I was writing it. So I it shocked me because there is one scene when I wrote this, I didn't mean to write this scene. And when I had written it, I thought, oh no, I cannot publish this. This is too embarrassing. And I tried to erase it and write something different. And I realized, no, you're not going to finish this novel unless you leave it where it is. And that's when I had to be brave to publish this novel with my name on it.
Well, it got fantastic reviews. One of them, in fact, says that you have a very special writing process that's reminiscent of automatic writing. Tell me about that.
Well, when I write, the only thing that matters to me is if I have a feeling of, let's say, harmony. And this harmony has to do with the words and with the pictures I see, because I sit there, I open up my mind, there's no ego. It's an egoless situation. And this space inside of me is then ready to give place to characters who can take over, who can act freely. So if I can let this happen, then they show me what's happening in the novel. And I just, I become the secretary of what I see.
So just really writing what comes into your head. But do you need to, how do you get to that space in your head? Do you meditate? Do you, what is your intro?
Well, that's a good question, because in fact, I started to meditate when I was writing My Life in Aspic. I meditated for 1 hour and then I started to write. Now that you're asking me, I remember that. But this wasn't necessary with the subsequent novels.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, your next novel came out just a year later.
Yeah.
And that's Adam Fugue. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, Adams Fuge in German, Adams Fugue.
Mm-hmm. Now, it got a lot of media attention. Now, that was mostly because it was hugely controversial because of its focus on neo-Nazi organisations. Tell me about that.
I had the idea that the Nazis hadn't evolved ideologically, that at the core of their ideology, there was still this idea of extinction of people, systematic extinction. So I had the idea of an interactive computer game where you could kill all the Turkish people who were living in Germany. And the idea of a Nazi who put this on the internet, and a Turkish secret agent who tries to find this man. And it turns out that this man is a secret agent who infiltrated the Nazis, but then turned into a Nazi himself. And these two aspects, this secret agent that had become a Nazi himself and the systematic killing of Turkish people, turned out to be a reality 3 months later, after the publication of the book. And so that's why it got so much media attention.
And it examines, once again, this whole thing of Germanness. What do you think being German is, and has it changed?
Well, I think the most important thing is that you don't identify with your country. I think that's the lesson I've learned, because it's very fragile to depend upon something exterior in the first place and something that is so huge and so complex as is a country. And how do you define this? You can only narrow it down when you try to define your Britishness or your Germanness, or that's just an idea you have. And that's just a feeling. You want a feeling. You want to belong to something. And I think nobody should try to do this. But of course, we do when it comes to a football game. I'm absolutely German. But yeah. You must not overrate this. I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah. Now, your next book, which came out in 2012, Glückskind, has been described as a mixture of social reportage and fairy tale. And Michael Verhoeven, a film director, very taken by this, and made it into a film.
Yes, yes, he did.
Tell me about that process, because it seemed to have been made incredibly fast. I mean, within 6 months it was out there.
Yes, it was a unique situation. There was this gap, and everything went so smoothly that we couldn't really believe what was happening, and then suddenly there was this film. So really, we were lucky at that time, and we haven't been so lucky with the second part of it, which I published last year.
That's Marie. Marie. The sequel.
Yes, it's the sequel. And Verhoeven wanted to make a film of this too, because he liked it very much. But the television broadcast wouldn't do it because they had changed their politics and so. But with Glückskind, we were really lucky. And I'm very happy because Michael Verhoeven is a very renowned filmmaker. Mm. And it's for me, it was great honor that he was interested. And he found the book. We didn't go to him and say, oh, please make a movie, look at this book. No, he found it and he got in touch with us. And so it was really like a fairy tale.
As indeed is the book. It's described as the inversion of the power of love, that's celebrated. Do you think that that's what Verhoeven was attracted to?
No, he explained it to me. What attracted him was the fact that there was a convincing turning point in this man's life when from a passive man he turned into an active person who really influenced his destiny and the destiny of all the people that surrounded him. And he found that point very convincing. That's why he wanted to make the film.
How was it received?
I think very well. 5 million people watched it. It was a Champions League night, and it beat the Champions League, so we were very successful.
Now we come on to your very latest book, Kingdom of Twilight. It's just come out. It follows the quest for identity and home in a traumatised post-war world. And it's very unusual because there are lots of aspects of World War II that perhaps certainly British people won't be familiar with. Tell me about the book.
Well, not only British people, but German people neither. I started it in 2004. I wrote 96 pages. I remember this very well because I wanted to understand the many continuities I felt were there between the Nazi era and the post-war era, which was my lifetime. Because at school and in the media, we only learned history as packages. You know, there was Weimar, there was the Third Reich, then there was the Hour Zero and the new beginning with the two Germanies, and then the reunification. But what's about the transitions? Mm. Because I felt, because of that racism I had encountered during my childhood and youth, I knew that there had to be many continuities, and I wanted to understand them. That's why I started to write this book. And this book is about people who survived the Holocaust, Germans, Jewish people, and who then start a journey to their destinies. The Germans in Poland, who had to flee from the Soviet army to the West, the Jews that had survived the Holocaust, who tried to get out of Europe to Palestine against the maneuvers of the British, who really didn't want them to go to Palestine in masses, you know, because they were afraid. They wanted to keep the peace in Palestine because Britain was still the mandatory a country. They had this UN mandatory over Palestine, and they had the access to the oil, which was very important to the British, and they knew that they would lose their influence if there was to be like a civil war, which then happened because they couldn't avoid it. So I had to describe this, and I found out that one of the most important men who organized this flight from Europe was a man called Erich Frank, who came from Gelsenkirchen and who during the Third Reich had already helped people, Jews, to get out of Germany, and then came back after the war, installed his headquarters in Munich, and then organized with over 500 helpers the flight from Europe of these people. And nobody knew about this at that time. Mm. I had to go to Israel several times in order to find information about Erich Frank and this whole thing.
Mm. Talking about nobody knowing, your mother first heard about the Holocaust when working as an au pair in London. That seems extraordinary.
Yeah, that was extraordinary. And she was really shocked because she was au pair to a Jewish family. who treated her were very kind to her and very open-hearted. And but they realized that she didn't know anything about the Holocaust, and then they started to give her books. And she read these books, and she was shocked by this. And this, but this was politics in Germany in the 50s. My mother told me that history lessons ended at the end of World War I. Nobody talked about this, the World War II, the Holocaust, nobody. And it's really interesting that the same thing happened in Israel, because we now think that the foundation of the State of Israel was like an act of compassion, worldwide compassion, because they had suffered so much. This is not true. That's a myth. Nobody talked about that. It was really hard negotiations in the background of the UN vote. And not even the Jews, the Zionists who already lived in Israel, talked to the Holocaust survivors. In fact, there was like a disdain for them because they had allowed that the Germans victimized them. So it was better not to talk about this because this was embarrassing. And the same thing happened in Germany, but on the other side of the story.
Because, of course, this book is an exploration of post-war guilt in a way,
yes,
isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, of course.
And not necessarily seen in the way that one would imagine. So, for instance, through the eyes of an SS officer.
Yes, yes, yes. Because I noticed that I was interested in what happened because many, many SS officers, soldiers and Nazis in general had absolutely no problem to continue their lives normally. And many started to work for the German secret service after the war because they had the knowledge, they had the know-how. Germany had been the only country in the world to have infiltrated Russia. So they really had more knowledge than the Americans or the British. In fact, the BND provided the Americans with all the information they needed to react. For example, one of the informations was that Russia, the Soviet Union, would be able to start a war on all borders at the same time. So this made the Americans very afraid. And in effect, that was one of the reasons why the Cold War started, because everybody relied on information given by these German officers.
It's a very important book, and that's a fact, I think, that's been recognised by English Penn, who awarded it, got a prize. You also got financial assistance under the translation programme. Translation, very important for a writer like you, whose work is well known in Germany, but not so much outside the borders.
Yes, of course, without any doubt. I'm very happy that this has happened in this way.
Are we seeing enough of it, though? I mean, how many... I don't expect you to have the facts and figures at your fingertips, but in terms of German writers in translation, is that growing?
I don't know. I can't give you this information. I was a lecturer, a literature lecturer, but I must admit that I basically stopped reading books since I write them.
Because it interferes with your own process?
No, no, because writing is so much better than reading. It's so much more intense. It's so much deeper. Mm. So I really enjoy writing. It's not the fact that I have written a book that thrills me. It's the process of writing.
Stephen Uhle, thank you so much for coming
to
me.
Thank you.
Kingdom of Twilight is published by Muckahouse Press. You've been listening to Meet the Writers, with many thanks to Weidong Ling, Claire Urban and Sai Villafurte for research. I'm Georgina Godwin. If you'd like to be in touch, it's gg@monocle.com. Thank you for listening.